I'd been doing what I do now for 4 years out of Miami, and I've been doing this because of the really because of the road that I went on in result to the Zika virus. And lo and behold, 3.5 years later, we have what's now the coronavirus. Julio, how are you? And please enjoy, make an introduction to yourself for listeners.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Ian. First off, Julio Rivera, I'm the editorial director of ReactionaryTimes.com and a conservative opinion columnist.
Excellent. And Julio, are you based in New York? Where are you based out of?
I'm actually, of all places in the world, I'm actually in Eastern Europe right now. So I relocated. I'm originally from the New York City area, born and raised in Paterson, New Jersey. And in New Jersey, for outside of the time I spent in military service, I was in New Jersey for most of that time.
Fantastic. And you're reporting for tell listeners some of the people that you're reporting for. Some of the media outlets.
Well, I'm not a reporter. I'm an opinion columnist, but I write for Newsmax, The Washington Times, Townhall.com, American Thinker, PJ Media. I've been published in Breitbart, The Hill, just really a lot of different places. Morning Consult. I just had a piece in CNS News that ran about Andrew Cuomo, which got a lot of attention. But yeah, basically most conservative opinion sites or news and opinion sites carry my commentary.
Okay, fantastic. So now, Julio, want to get your impression and opinion, therefore, of what happened January 6th on Capitol Hill. And this is somewhat astonishing to have a president, a sitting president of the United States, whether listeners, viewers like him or not, to have a sitting president of the United States completely banned from a social media platform as Donald Trump was. And other people being harshly critiqued, especially it seemed like those that are conservative in nature in their view. Now, for instance, Julio, I myself started a website called StopCommunism.net, and within 10 days, the thing had been taken down by the host. In addition to some other of the websites, including StopMassMedia.com, which is a shirt that I'm wearing, that was taken down as well. That had been up for 3 years. But once I started StopCommunism.net, boom, they took down a whole bunch of my sites. It was a host out of San Francisco. Julio, have you found any similar type treatment being a conservative voice or opinion?
Well, yeah. I've been banned several times. Not banned, but I've been suspended several times by Facebook. But my Facebook, if you want to call it fan page or public page, Julio Rivera or Conservarican, it was named, it has both names, that was actually taken down permanently. And I tried to put up a new fan page over the last couple of days, and I couldn't. It wouldn't let me create it. And I looked in my support inbox, and apparently I'm banned from creating new pages on Facebook until May 30th of this year. So apparently, you know, and I don't know why they pick on me. It's not like, you know, I'm one of the, I mean, I consider my opinions very honest and truthful. I don't cite sources that are unreputable. I've never really perpetuated anything that was, you could consider a lie. I just think it's the fact that I'm a Hispanic conservative and I do a lot of major media, so I think they're trying to suppress certain voices. Because I mean, people like me are considered, I guess, an anomaly, and it kind of, ruins the narrative that most on the left are trying to perpetuate. So for whatever reason, I've had a lot of problems with Facebook. Twitter, I don't even bother with. I've had a Twitter page for about 6 years, and I've either tweeted or retweeted less than 1,500 times in 6 years. So I really couldn't care less. My business model and my model as far as getting my voice out there has less to do with social media and more to do with writing for major publications and doing it that way.
Yeah. Now in your view, in your opinion, and from being in Miami, I'll tell you that it was
you're in Miami. Okay.
Yeah, I'm in Miami.
Good for you. Good for you. I wish I was in Miami right now.
Cheers.
I did. Glasses up to Miami. So I want you to know, first off, let me tell you something, Ian. I forget all this, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? It's Saturday night in Eastern Europe, right? It's I'm 7 hours ahead of you. So it's Saturday night. So that's, I'm just going to caution and preface everything by saying it's Saturday night.
So. Saturday Night Live from Eastern Europe.
Here, pour some more, baby.
So, you know, I mean, look, I tried to stay fairly politically neutral up until about the time of about a year ago when I was in the Northwest and Portland was basically being destroyed and attacked.
Yeah, it's a disaster. I can tell you a little story about Portland.
Yep.
One of my good, he's a good friend of mine, actually. You'll probably say, how are you guys friends? But Tom Hartman, you know who Tom Hartman is, right?
He's like been on my program twice. Yeah.
Tom. Tom is like, you know, the king of the progressive talk movement, right? He's smack dab in the middle of Portland. When I first started doing Tom, he was still in Washington, D.C. And whenever I do a show, I'm like, I sit there and I'm like, I love this guy on a personal level. But he's literally one of the most dangerous voices in America. Because right now he's in Portland, the epicenter. He's constantly, I had a nasty argument with him this week, which we all have all the time. Like, it's like one of those things we just kind of verbally spar and then we shake hands when it's over. Nice guy. He's met my daughter and we've hung out and, like, you know, on a personal level. But it's Portland right now. If there was one city that should secede from the United States of America, and we can give it back to the USSR, which doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, there's elements in Russia and communist elements all over the world that want to reform the USSR. Let's just give them Portland, because, you know, that's what they want to be. So we can
I like
just
the go, fire.
Just let them have it. Let them have
now,
it.
I didn't realize he was in Oregon. I thought he was in the northeast. But, yeah, he's been on the program a few times.
No, he was. He was in D.C. for a long time. He went back about 2 or 3 years ago back to Portland. So, yeah.
But I'll tell you what, Julio. So when this mayor Ted, or I don't remember who it was or is, and he just didn't do anything. And then Chicago, and you're from New York, New Jersey. You know what's happening there is ridiculous. With De Blasio and Cuomo, this is insanity in my opinion. And so I started to take a site. And I'll tell you what, in Miami, I was astonished at how many of the Hispanics. Okay, these are, you know, the Cubans. I'm talking about the Cubans and Venezuelans. It sounds like you're from Puerto Rico. Same type of atmosphere, but perhaps a little more dramatic in Cuba since they had the Fidel Castro catastrophe, I suppose is a good way of saying it, in Venezuela, where these are thriving economies, thriving countries. And then they were taken over by these regimes. And they were the Miami-Dade police had a report, a 100-mile-long caravan for Donald Trump. So we're being fed, you know, we're being fed, of course. It's almost like a force feeding that 81 million people voted for Biden. In your view, Julio, in your view, what happened January 6th? What was that from your angle? What was that?
I think that there's a lot of people that were fed up with, you know, the lies that they've been fed, as you know, so clearly point out, you know, the suppression of all the many victories of President Trump in 3 years before the coronavirus. And honestly, maybe perhaps his greatest shining moment was Operation Warp Speed, which delivered a vaccine for a deadly virus. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. And we had a vaccine in less than a calendar year. The fact of the matter is that there was suppression even with that. Why did the pharmaceutical companies wait till just days after the election to sit there and say, hey, we're going to be ready to deliver, you know, hundreds of millions of doses of this vaccine in just a matter of weeks? You know, it was collusion. You know why? Because Donald Trump wanted to reform the pharmaceutical market, where these companies arbitrarily at any point decide to take up the price of vital medicines that people need to live for their very existence, right? They drive that up, you know, down, you know, hundreds of percent. you know, arbitrarily, you know, Pharma Bro and all the stories that go on in the pharmaceutical industry. You know, he wanted to go after them. So those are the people, along with other industries, that funded Joe Biden's campaign. And in a lot of ways, those are people that buy advertising for mainstream media. In addition to that, to talk about the mainstream media, NBC, one of their major investors, the Chinese government, they're going to put together an NBC Universal Studios theme park, the largest in the world they're building in China right now. So the Chinese government is influencing American media. They have major investment in NBC. They have major investment in the Washington Post. They have major investment in Hollywood studios. So the messages that we're seeing in movies that are, they used to be subliminal and kind of subtle, but now I can't even watch movies without seeing blatant examples of, you know, they're trying to lead you politically. And it's very annoying. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I can look past it. I'm smart enough to detect it when I see it. But to the average disaffected, disconnected, not even paying attention to this stuff kind of American, you know, I've been, to give you an example, right? I'm in a like 5 or 6 baseball groups in Facebook. And everybody's been celebrating the fact that they're moving the All-Star game from Georgia. Oh, it's so woke.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we're gonna find somewhere else. If you look at the Georgia voting bill, it's tantamount and equal to what we have in most states. In most states, if you're gonna vote by mail, you gotta send a copy of your ID. These aren't ideas that are so foreign, but obviously everything that happens that doesn't play exactly into the favor of what the left wants immediately is done in the spirit of white supremacy and is racist. So basically, if you don't do what the left wants you to do, you're a bigot. I've been called a bigot. I'm a person of color. I'm a Hispanic. You know, my parents are from Puerto Rico. I'm from the inner city. I actually grew up in the hood, and I got white liberals telling me what I'm supposed to believe. You know, so it's sickening to me, Ian. I mean, I can't, you know. That's why I drink. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, so look, Julio, so I'm in Miami, and I go to this town hall meeting, and the Zika virus and the pesticide, and I trace these things back to this banking corruption with the Rockefeller, the usual names. Of course, it totally opened doors for me. I had no idea what was going on.
This isn't a joint, by the way. This is a rolled cigarette. I just want to preface that.
Well, yeah.
I don't want people to get the wrong idea. You know, I just, you know, sometimes I roll cigarettes, you know.
And so I come across a guy named Anthony Sutton. And this is 2015, late 2015, rolling into 2016. So I start this online radio show in Wynwood, Wynwood Radio. And right about that time, Donald Trump, of course, he's running for candidacy and for president. He says, if I run for president, I'll be doing it as an independent. Well, to me, that spoke to me because I thought, okay, that's great. The last guy I had voted for was Ross Perot. I liked his independent style. I liked where he stood. I thought both parties were corrupt. But then he's talking about the deep state. So in your definition, Julio, and what you write about in your opinion pieces, you know, Newsmax is you throwing out some pretty large organizations that you're writing for. In your opinion, what is the deep state? How do you define that? Because I don't think that Donald Trump ever did the American people any justice by defining it. What is the definition in your view? What is the deep state?
The deep state to me is a network of establishment figures that exist within the unelected bureaucracies, namely the intelligence community. They work in cahoots with people throughout other government agencies and legislators that have been in Washington, D.C. for a long period of time. It's not an official entity that has any sort of figurehead leadership. What it is influential D.C. players, if they want to go ahead and go after somebody, or if they want to go ahead and protect somebody who's doing things, because I mean, listen, it's out there in the ether. We know that Hunter Biden's investment firm in China received over $1 billion in investment, and now Joe Biden's president. There will be a quid pro quo at some point consummated, but we can't really draw a straight line to what exactly it was, because nobody in the intelligence community wants to draw that line. So that's a problem, because nobody really, there's protection out there for people that are doing certain. You talk about the Clinton Foundation, and their various, things, inappropriate behavior that they've done, you know, which be, you know, I mean, if they were really investigated, what happened to all the money that was donated for the Haitian cause? Why did the Clinton Foundation receive money from Middle Eastern entities, countries that around the same time received favorable arms deals from the United States State Department? Why did Bill Clinton receive four payments of $750,000 from Russian elements right before the Uranium One deal was done? You know, these things are things that would normally, if a Republican did them, you know, or if anybody, actually, I shouldn't say that, because Republicans do bad things too. There is a uniparty, as you said, that, you know, you voted for Ross Perot, you like Donald Trump because they're independent. There is a uniparty, but it's gotten to the point where it's almost like a reverse McCarthyism now, and Republicans are just being attacked for everything. But I think that a lot of the establishment Republicans don't really care. They're going to lay down as long as they play ball. They get to control the progressives moving the progressive agenda forward, because, and they'll control it by not providing opposition. That's the key. That's why Donald Trump was so valuable, and it's sad that he's gone, because at the end he did have certain veto powers, and he had certain powers over the bureaucracies, the smaller bureaucracies. Obviously, he can appoint an attorney general. He could downsize, you know, certain, you know, the Justice Department, or make some changes within the FBI or the CIA, or do things like that, which now we have Joe Biden, who's pretty much asleep at the wheel. He's basically going to just enable himself to not get forced to be accountable for the things that he's done for years. And his family.
Let's paint with a broad stroke here, possibly, and say, you know, we can go back to FDR's New Deal. We can go back to Woodrow Wilson signing the Federal Reserve into place, in which he lamented. We can go, we can come to more recent history. We can go to JFK. There's a banking thread that can be tied through these. As Americans, the Vietnam era is a greatly aging generation. And in fact, I was talking to a guy yesterday that served in Vietnam. It's like World War II. I'm still young enough where you see these generations grow. There's not many World War II vets out there. They're like 100 years old now, if they are. Your Vietnam guys are getting into their late 70s and their 80s. But if we go to that, can we say that some of these political strengths, 250 years is not a long time for a country to be established. When you're looking at like Spain or England or France, they've been around for centuries. You know, the United States is still a very new kid on the block, if you will. Do you think that there's anything that might be, not to get theoretical here, but is there anything that might still be threatening the United States that may have been, one of the things that JFK was fighting? And again, he was a Democrat. Even in Andrew Jackson, right, in the 1840s, was a Democrat. It crosses political lines. It really doesn't. I don't like to get into the parties because again, it's really about morality, I think. Is there something that does exist? It seems like the United States is right now, the country is in massive turmoil. I mean, the coronavirus and the mask thing, they coincide with, it's become political. Do you see where I'm going with this? And do you have any comments with what I've thrown out there?
Yeah, I mean, John F. Kennedy himself, a couple years before he was murdered, gave the famed, and I don't know if you're familiar about this, the secret society speech, where he kind of attempted to outline the fact that major media in America, even then, when it was in its infancy in a lot of ways, I mean, comparatively speaking to where we are now technologically, you know, now we have the internet. Now, back when JFK was talking, we had a couple of local radio stations and maybe four or five television channels. Now we have so much more than that. And we have the internet and the power of the internet. And the power of the internet allows, you know, people to be citizen journalists and all these other things. But what he was talking about back then was the way that, you know, there were media monopolies that were putting out bad information and covering things up. And you know, that's kind of what he was alluding to. And I think JFK was getting a little too close. He was being, you know, kind of coy with the way that he was starting to give this information to the American people, because up to that point, nobody had sort of attempted to lift the veil on that. So I think that's one of the reasons why John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And I'm going to tell you something here, Ian. If it wasn't for the fact that Donald Trump has the gravitas that he does, that he has the power that he does, that he has the money that he does, that he has the circle and the things that he has around him, I think he would have wound up like JFK. You know, or at the very least, he would have been pushed out of office. I was a big Ted Cruz supporter in 2016. I actually came into, you know, major political media being, a big supporter of Ted Cruz. So it tells you I'm a little bit newer. But the fact of the matter was, if Ted Cruz, I'm glad in retrospect that Ted Cruz didn't win, because if it had been Ted Cruz, I think he would have been destroyed within a year. I don't think he would have had, he doesn't have the money, first off, to even fight all these lawsuits and everything that the left was throwing at Donald Trump. Like, we don't even imagine, like, the half. If you really look at all the legal action, all the litigation, the numerous impeachment attempts, because there were two, everything that Donald Trump was able to weather to get through his only term was because he's Donald Trump. A weaker man, a poorer man, and I hate to make it about that, sure. In a lot of ways would not have survived. And I think that becomes more obvious as we move past it, his presidency. Yeah.
And impeached when he ran out of office, basically. So we're getting to some of these basic, they're really human rights. They should be human rights, but they are American rights. They're written into the Constitution. And there's people that have been on my program, such as Paul Craig Roberts. You might be familiar with that name. He's a former fellow at Oxford, also at the Hoover Institute in Stanford, economist for, I think, Reagan. And he said blatantly on my program 3 years ago, he says, Ian, Americans don't have any constitutional rights. Is there any sense of free media in your view? I mean, certainly you and I are speaking, and there'll be people that listen and watch this. And there are people that browse my site and your site. So that is free in a sense. However, it does get to a point where it seems like once these voices get to a level, they do get muted. Is there freedom of speech? Do we have free press? What do you think, Julio?
I think that when you saw what the House of Representatives did recently, right at the outset of the outset of the Biden administration, where they sent a letter kind of threatening the major cable carriers and streaming services about networks like OAN and Newsmax and others and Fox News, over supposedly spreading misinformation. I think that's just the tip of the iceberg, Ian. I think that during this 4-year term for the Democrats, I think you're going to see the weaponizing of the Federal Communications Commission. That's something that I talked about even in advance of the election. This is what's going to happen if the Democrats win. They're going to weaponize the FCC. At that point, you know, conservative talk radio, which has been, you know, dominating the talk radio market and is a big reason why we had like the Tea Party surge of 2010, the Republican Revolution of 14, you know, having the majority won in 2016 with the presidency. All these things are going to be under attack, especially given the fact that we wound up blowing Georgia. So now they have a legislative domination as well. So and then in addition to that, you throw in the fact that we have what's nothing short of collusion in terms of social media, because social media, in order to have we saw this with Parler. Parler needs Amazon Web Services and cloud services and other vendors in order to make their conservative app work. You get those vendors pulling out because they can, you know, and when they do that, they wind up, you know, destroying the only social media that, you know, really caters to conservatives. So we're getting it from all angles here, Ian, and it's going to only get worse. I think the midterm that's coming up is really, and I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to seem like I'm an alarmist. I don't want to seem like, you know, Chicken Little. But the fact of the matter is, that's the end. If we give the Democrats 4 years unimpeded, unobstructed, in this era of cancel culture and all these other things, conservatism is going to die in America.
Yeah, and so why is it? Why is it? Let's say that yes, there is an attack on conservatives. let's just say that. And if that is a valid argument, which the two of us would certainly, I would agree with that. Why? And again, Donald Trump at one point in his political career was a Democrat, so he's been on both sides of that party or that political aisle.
Been on every side of every issue, but as president, he kept his promises.
yeah. But if we go with, why is it then that conservatives are being targeted, or why are they being silenced? Who does it benefit? Who do their laws benefit? If we're trying to draw a tie into this deep state, right? This kind of hidden force that does basically bolster the mechanics of how DC is operating. Does liberalism support the deep state? What is the conclusion? Why are conservative voices being attacked in that sense?
I think it goes back to what I was saying about foreign influence in America. I think that, like, if you look at legislators, a congressman makes $170,000 a year. You know, a senator makes, I think, just probably a little bit more than that. Why do these people stay in office for 20, 30 years and now they're worth $40, $50 million? Because they're getting money pumped into their pockets to support the interest, whether they're either corporate cronyism, between, corporations and the government domestically, or the real dangerous, the elephant in the room, which is foreign money, foreign investment. And you know what? I think we keep getting thrown this Ukraine, Russia, all that kind of, that's amateur hour. The fact is really the elephant in the room, the dangerous adversary that is Pierce. And look at Swalwell, Eric Swalwell. Why has he not been censured and or impeached and or arrested for, basically mixing, with his Chinese spy girlfriend, God knows how much information. He was on, committees, congressional committees that have, certain security accesses and security clearances that, I'm sure he was giving her information that, no civilian in America, much less a Chinese spy, should be having. That's really what it boils down to. That's the danger. That's who's benefiting from all of this. America's been sold out to foreign interests. And it's been sold out by the very legislators that were elected to protect for domestic interests and improve the lives of Americans.
So for listeners to understand this, you're saying that the Chinese woven themselves into our government and they are manipulating. Do you think it's gone that far that they have now gotten a stronghold, that they have manipulated our economic system and our political system? Do you think, can we go with that?
Yeah, we're the United States of China right now. That's basically what we've become. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk resolution here. Julio, let's talk some resolution, man. what can Americans do? I mean, what can we do? We still have the most powerful military. Sounds like you served in the military. We do, at least for another 10 years, it would seem. I don't know how.
Beyond. Listen, this is the one thing, as far as militarily with China, they're actually outproducing us on the surface level, naval-wise. They're building, more ships than we have. They have more ships. They have more tonnage. They can fight a war of attrition if we go that way, where it's because, the Chinese don't care about life. They don't care about their soldiers. They'll just, it's like the kamikazes with Japan. They don't care. They'll just keep sending ships out there. But militarily, I mean, if we really wanted to, if it really came down to a war, we can get undetectable submarines off of their coast and, you know, shoot nukes at them from under the sea and literally destroy any country on Earth within a few hours if we really wanted to. I really don't worry about whether or not we're strong enough militarily. What I worry about is who's in control of that military and, you know, who's in their pockets. That's really, to me, what really the issues are.
Let's talk domestically here, Julio, because it sounds like, in my view, we've got some real issues stateside, and we've got Governor Abbott, strong arming Biden. Maybe they've sued things over now, but the word, you know, even when Trump got into office, you had Jerry Brown in California talking about secession. Is that a possibility you see coming down the pipe? Do you think economically one of these large states could show some muscle and say, hey, we'll leave the union. We'll be a threat to breaking up the union. I mean, the Texans, for instance, are very proud people. They broke away from the Mexican Union and they were their own republic. I think even in California, this is a conversation I had a couple of weeks ago with the guy that's putting together a movement to actually break away from California. There's a lot of that talk going on domestically. How do you see that sort of thing panning out? Let's say the United States can defend itself from a foreign enemy. How does it defend itself from a domestic enemy?
I don't see secession in any scenario being a realistic thing. I don't think Texas wants to do it. I think California may feign that they want to do it, but they'd go broke very quickly. Right. You know, especially with the policies that they continue to push and the fact that they have the open border. I mean, a lot of these illegal immigrants came in through California. I don't know if it's more than Texas, because Texas has technically more border land. But I don't see that as a reality. I'm sure that there's people out there trying to raise money for it, because there's just grifters all over the movement. I'm not saying that anything about the negative about the person you had. They're probably a good-hearted person that's doing it with good intentions. But, you know, you get a lot of these sort of fringy movements in politics, and, you know, every idiot that does a couple of TV shows wants to get a super PAC and you know, just kind of extort money from people, and then it just goes into administrative costs that, you know, nothing ever gets fulfilled. So, no, I mean, I don't see that as a realistic movement at all.
What do you say to the Latin American community? Let's look at a couple things here as far as Mexicans. They're coming from a government that is very corrupt. A lot of these Hispanic families have moved to the United States to seek a better life. That includes white family, blacks kind of were here for slavery, but you know, a lot of different kind of ethnicities and people from around the world have moved to the United States. But representing a Hispanic community yourself, what do you say to the Hispanics? And what I'm talking about is, again, in Miami, the Cubans, I was astonished at how many Cubans were saying, this is communism. They're taking down these statues. They're trying to reorganize the education. This is blatant. This is what happened in my homeland, my island. This is communism. And they're totally unseated. They're furious. And then when Trump, they're calling it a coup. What do you from a Hispanic viewpoint? Because from my view, I don't have any Hispanic ancestry. From my view, I'm saying, hey, dude, you know, the Hispanics are a key populace to the demographics of this country moving forward. What do you say to that community, Julio?
Ian, I say, si se puede. That's what I say. No, in all honesty, let me tell you something. The Cubans have it right. I love Cubans. I have some close associates that are Cubans. They're very anti-communist. They're very anti-socialist. I love the Cubans. The Puerto Ricans, my own people, you go to New York, you go to a lot of the major cities where you have a lot of Puerto Ricans. they disappoint me in a lot of ways because they fall into the identity politics. They fall into a lot of the traps that are set by the liberal left. I was able to escape that because, as I said, si se puede, yes, we can move away from the left if we want to. But it's a choice that we have to make and we have to commit to. No, it's a difficult thing, you know, being Hispanic and being conservative. I think a lot of Hispanics are picked on, unfortunately, by the left's, you know, PR machine. But I think if you take most Hispanics and you ask them issue by issue, you would find that most of them are socially conservative. Most of them are entrepreneurial and they're just voting wrong.
Yeah, that's it. Well said. Okay, I'll take a few minutes because I know we've taken up a lot more time than I knew I was going to get from you. Take a few minutes and tell listeners what they can expect from you. What's coming down the pipe from you? You have a book. What are you working on right now?
Well, Reactionary Times TV. You can catch that at reactionarytimes.com. We're working, you know, like as you pointed out earlier, you know, my columns are everywhere. If you just search Julio Rivera columnist, you'll find stuff everywhere. I am writing a book. I've been writing it for the last 5 years. It'll probably take another five to finish. I'm all over the place. First it was a book, then it was a screenplay, then it was this and it was that. I'm all over the place. But yeah, just look up Julio Rivera conservative and you'll find what you need. But really go to Reactionary Times, reactionarytimes.com. That's where we really want to send people.
Awesome. Julio, thanks for joining the program. Look forward to talking to you in the future. Julio Rivera.
Hey, si se puede. Don't forget.